You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. We almost went straight to the end.
That's right.
I guess we're done.
Yep.
Okay.
See you later.
See you. Out.
Yeah. Sorry, we've run out of time. So it's Martin Brewer here.
Chris Gilpin.
Did I introduce myself?
No,
I
you
don't
didn't.
Remember.
Dan Collins.
Dan Collins.
We have a format.
We do.
We broke it.
We don't follow it often, but we have a format.
The format is there's no format.
There it's you like, go.
There's one rule. There are no rules.
That's right.
Dun, dun, dun. Friday night, Hey Kids Comics. We're going to talk about comic books, I think.
Sam's not here. So
Sam's
yeah.
not here.
No Luann.
No Luann.
Well, we'll see. He might start texting us.
I don't know. I think he's at work, so I don't think he's going to talk about Luann.
Okay.
But you never know. We should talk about Darkhawk. We just started getting into that.
Yeah.
So I guess Darkhawk, right? Marvel character. He's been, my understanding is he's just like in a flashback-y thing in the movie. He's not actually.
But what's his name? Gunn?
Yeah, Peter.
In what movie?
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is coming out.
Okay.
And James Gunn, apparently Darkhawk is in the movie.
Well, I saw something saying he wasn't in the movie, so I don't know.
Yeah. Now, for those of you like me who are not Marvelites, who the hell is Darkhawk?
Or if you weren't around in the 90s.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Fired up, Chris.
He's a. Oh, I could read it, but.
Chris is our 90s expert. Let's go.
Yeah, he gets his amulet that turns him into Darkhawk. Eventually, it turns out there's a whole. Like planet full of these guys, like soldiers
okay.
almost. But he was that's way down the line.
So like a riff on Nova with the Nova Corps
kind of. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, apparently he is or isn't in the movie, and speculators are going bonkers over his first appearance. But
which isn't his first appearance?
In typical Marvel fashion, there's a massive debate on what is his first appearance. So Marvel, now, see this is something I don't understand. Overstreet says, we won't get into the Wolverine debate too much because that's a whole show in itself. Marvel says Wolverine 180 is the first appearance of Wolverine. That's the first time you see him, full character, his name, full costume. Yes, it's in the last panel of the comic book, but it's a full first appearance. In one instance, an associate editor, a junior member, made slip in a letter column and he said 181.
Yeah,
which is Wolverine is in the whole issue, Incredible Hulk 181. Overstreet, the price guide that was very important when there was no internet. Now I question whether it's important at all, relevant. I mean, it's out of date before they even send it to the printer. They made a mistake, in my opinion, and said Wolverine, Incredible Hulk 181 is the first appearance of Wolverine. So even though Marvel said 180. Overstreet said 181, so everyone went nuts. Everyone's buying 180. 181, they're making a big, huge fuss, and it's a debate.
Yeah.
Same thing is happening here. Same thing is happening here with
what's actually happening here is that we're playing with all the dials.
Yes. We're playing with knobs. So, back on track here. So, Darkhawk number 1 is considered by Marvel Comics... Go to the online database at Marvel as the first appearance of Darkhawk.
Yeah, first appearance origin. Yeah.
Like, forget this first cameo, first full appearance, first blah, blah, blah. No, there's first.
Second appearance in Canada.
Right? They don't issue 16 gold medals for the first, you know, this is the first guy who tied his shoelaces. This is the first guy who showed up at the blocks first. This is the first guy who jumped out of the blocks. This is the first guy who passed the 50-yard mark. This is the first. No, it's you won the race or you didn't win the race. You're first or you're not.
Yeah.
So Marvel says Dark Hawk number one is first appearance. Everybody on the planet is going nuts over which issue of Marvel Age?
97.
Marvel Age 97. Now, Marvel Age was a trade magazine published by Marvel in comic book format, but it was like preview of stuff coming up. This is what's going to be released. Here's interviews. Here's articles. Here's sketches. Here's so it wasn't really a comic book.
Just a previews book.
It was just a previews book, even though it was in comic book format. It was very much like Wizard at the time, right? So it's more like an informative magazine with previews, and they have a small little preview of this Darkhawk, and everyone's going, oh, that's his first appearance.
Yeah.
Well, no, it isn't, because nothing in Marvel Age is canon. Marvel Age isn't a narrative book. It's an informative book, like a news show as opposed to a television program, like a drama.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why people are jumping up and down. Like, how much has this thing jumped? $18 for a copy that you could get for 25 cents?
Somebody paid $61 for it.
$61!
$61.
But the seller said it was 9.6, so.
Well, there you go. Like, that's like.
And he has a long box full of them.
That's right.
That's like that, what was it, the Superman comic that. This is going to be the first appearance of Superboy or something like that, wasn't it? Recently, the New 52.
Oh yeah, New Superman.
Yeah,
somebody burst out of a tank and they thought that's the new Superman and went up and then no, it's not. Went down.
Yeah.
Now it's funny because back when we all first met, I was really into like this speculation, and trying to find that comic book, buy it. Get it, resell it, make some money. But I've given up for more than a year.
Well, I mean, obviously, if there's some tool out there who's willing to pay $61 for this Marvel Age comic, there's money to be had. So if you happen to have three or four copies of this comic book and some dorkhead is willing
or
to give you...
Or a whole long box because it's garbage.
Yeah, right. And some dorkhead is willing to give you $61, why wouldn't you try to sell it?
Yeah.
You know? Like, make a few dollars. But for To kind of put out there this artificial narrative that this is the first appearance and start pumping it up and then inflating. Like, I don't know. It's kind of frustrating because I've seen, you know, first appearance comic books jump up in price and then crash tremendously when, you know, that Superman is a perfect example. Lobo number one back in the 90s is a 80s, 90s is a perfect example. Help me out here. Frank Miller, Batman. I always get it wrong. It's not Legends of the Dark Knight. It's Return of the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
So Return of the Dark Knight, number one. I remember seeing as high as $250 a copy. It's a $50 book now.
Yeah.
And it's a seminal piece of work.
Yeah.
Because there is so many of them. So I really think that these speculators and stuff are pretty much going to get burned.
Yeah. It's like the Star Wars Marvel number 49 from the original Marvel.
Oh, my gosh. That's just crazy.
The title of the issue is The Last Jedi. On the cover, it says The Last Jedi, which happens to be the title of the new movie coming out, right?
Right.
And that book is gone. It has nothing to do with the movie. It's just called The Last Jedi. It was written and when? How long ago was that comic book written?
In the 70s.
Like, it's nothing to do with it, yet it's gone from a $5, $6 book or whatever up to...
Have you read it, though?
Because
maybe it is the exact plot.
It's not
of this movie coming out.
It is not.
So here's my trick question. Here's my trick question. Because a comic book aficionados such as ourselves, right, are not buying these kind of hypey books just because a movie's coming out.
Nope.
Who is? Like, who is this guy who paid $61 for Marvel Age?
I honestly think it's like average Joe, who heard somewhere that buying and selling comics and flipping them is an easy thing to do. And I think that's my impression. Like,
but who's going to be able to flip it?
People that don't know better.
Like, if you bought Walking Dead number one, right? A genuine, due to its rarity, due to its popularity, it's a genuine comic book worth owning and collecting, and it's going to be a key for quite a few years. What value that key has is up for debate. So if you have a spare copy of, like, I was given the opportunity to buy Walking Dead number one for $20 a copy, two of them way back when it came out. Right. Yeah. At that point in time, I didn't think it was a big book. I hate black and white comics. One of the reasons why I'm not into the Turtles. And I said no.
Yeah.
It hit as high as $2,500 for a first issue.
U.S.
U.S.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is buying it for $2,500 U.S.?
Rich people.
Rich people.
Like
I saw one of those rich people on Sunday.
Like, I understand somebody going, I really have to have this comic book. I'm willing to pay a couple $100 because that's what it's worth. But $2,500? A veteran collector like myself is like saying, okay, let's just wait a little while and yeah, it'll eventually be available at a better price.
Yeah.
That's so, the thing with like all of these hype books. Like even Fantastic Four 46, first appearance of Black Bolt. You know, that one went up during the, when they were talking about the Inhumans movie, but now you can get like a 5.0 for $200.
But yeah, but still, it's
a year ago.
It's still $200 comic book. Like, we're going from $500 to $200 because of hype.
Yeah. Yes.
We're not going 50 cents to $61. We're not going, $20 to $2,500.
Yeah.
Like, who are these people that are, I have a theory.
And you're going to tell us.
Let us preface by saying that I'm an old fart and quite opinionated at times. I think it's millennials.
Yeah, it's speculate. Like, it's because literally people that think something that's on its way up is going to keep going up.
Like, there's this thing out there. I'm into action figures too, right? Yeah. So there's a guy out there who casts custom action figure parts, paints them very sloppily, throws them on a piece of cardboard, and just makes it ironic. So things like pink stormtroopers,
yeah,
where the stormtrooper is cast in pink and has a little flower in his helmet to, you know, peace, love, but the contradiction of the fact that he's a
killer,
basically soldier, a science fiction Nazi,
yeah,
you know, blah, 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 and sells it for $50, yeah, right, for this custom piece of plastic. And some millennials are buying this up as art pieces. Now, I know guys who are doing this in the garage. I know guys who, like, I can easily name 10 people that do this and maybe sell them for $10, $15 a piece, maybe $20 a piece. And there's this one guy named Sucklord who's selling these for like $400, $500, $600 a piece. And the quality is exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the art world. Is a Jackson Pollock really worth $2.5 million when I can pretty much recreate a Jackson Pollock painting in terms of the style and stuff? Like, what's the it factor? You know, like, so millennials,
you don't have it.
That's... Yeah, exactly. Pop vinyl, another perfect example, right? These stupid little pop characters. There's massive collectors out there that are buying $80, $90, $250 limited editions, buying every single $10 version that's out there, and it's all going to crash. People, Google Pog. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do.
I was just on Comic Book Man the other night.
Oh, was that? Because I haven't seen that episode yet.
Yeah.
It's on my PVR. Just yeah, Google Pogs. You can sell a Pog for $10 if it was the right one. Nowadays, you'd be lucky if you can even, you know, trade it for, I don't know, sticky piece of gum on the underside of a McDonald's table.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the trick is that if you've got Marvel Age number 97 at home, sell it now.
Yeah.
See,
buy it back in a year for a dollar.
I have a theory, too.
Okay.
And the theory is the only way you can actually make money, I believe, in the speculator market is to sell to the first wave of speculators.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
That's like, how you make your money.
Like, yeah. Perfect example is that, you know, the what's his name? Christopher John Tyler, whatever,
yeah,
who does the action figure covers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he decides he's going to do a black and white Boba Fett action figure cover. The color one was available at comic shops. The black and white one's only going to be available through my website. A limited edition, blah, blah, blah. Sales at midnight. Come and buy, blah, blah, blah. So I figure, okay, well, I was collecting those covers. I'll order one. And then everyone else is like, well, geez, I really want one. Oh, I want one. Oh, I want one. So I thought I'd order like four or five of them. So I'm staying up late at night. 12 midnight hits. Order. Website crash. Okay. Order. Website crash. Okay. Order. Yeah, no. Website's dying. Finally, my order goes through. But because of the crashes and stuff, I ended up with three orders instead of one. So I got a ton of extra copies. So right away, I'm like, oh, what am I going to do with all this? So I go to the website to find out if I can, like, cancel one of my orders or return it or you know, like, do something. And it's, like, 16 minutes after midnight. And I go back to the site. And it's like, sold out. 16 minutes. Gone. So I go on eBay. All right. Well, let's see if I can sell some of the used ones. So I'm noticing prices are ridiculous. Like, I think it was like $20 US plus shipping for the comic. On eBay, I see, you know, some guys asking $150, $100, $125. So I'm like, if some guy's asking $100, I paid $20, I'll ask $75. So I put one up for $75. I barely even hit post. And I get a message, gone, sold. I'm like, okay. So I put another one up. Gone, sold. So I sold all my extras. And we're talking 25 minutes after midnight. A half hour hasn't even gone by.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, fine. So my extras are sold. I'm good. I went to bed. Woke up the next morning. I looked. eBay sales, you know, $23, $25. So it was like that instantaneous. I couldn't get it at the website at 2 minutes after midnight.
I'm ticked.
I gotta have it. I must have it. So like you said, that initial wave of collectors that absolutely have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the guys that are coming up behind going, well, I'll wait a little bit because it'll drop.
Yeah.
Then you got the completists who are like, well, you know, I really want the book for my collection, but I'm patient enough. I'll wait till it hits $20.
Yeah.
But yeah, I made off like a bandit.
Huh. Well, I like a certain artist. I won't name names, but...
I think we can guess.
Yeah. I've been quick to jump and
Brian
buy them.
Michael Bendis.
No. He's a writer. I've learned that you can spend like $60 on the variant that just comes out, and then 6 months later buy it for $5.99 on eBay.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just making a list now. I make a list. Okay, I'll check that out in 6 months.
Yeah, just make a list, and as you go through the wild, you'll find it cheaper.
It's like all those crazy. Games. Remember when the GameStop variants first came out?
Yeah,
that was insanity.
Yeah, people were going nuts.
Yeah, you can just buy them, you know, for almost nothing.
But I still don't understand the mentality of the person who's buying those books at that high blood price. Who bought Walking Dead number one at $2,500?
Well, I told you, people, it's like the stock market, right? Something goes up, people jump on board thinking it's going to keep going up, but they're too late.
Yeah.
And they hold on hoping at some point it'll still keep going up, but it just gradually starts to come down again.
Reminds me of the Simpsons episode where Homer buys stock in pumpkins. And they're telling him to sell at Halloween. He's like, no way.
No way. I'm keeping that stock.
Yeah.
Speaking of stock market, the guy was jumping down my throat about Overstreet. And we were talking about Overstreet, right? And how I think it's kind of irrelevant. He's like, oh, you know, Overstreet. I'm like thinking to myself, would you buy stocks? Would you run a stock brokerage if all you had was one paperback book that was printed 4 months ago with all of the stock prices from 6 months ago?
Yep.
You'd lose your shirt.
Yep.
You'd lose your shirt.
Yeah.
So all you people still clinging to Overstreet, sorry, it's time is done.
Yeah. That's social media, eBay.
Like, if you want to know how much a book is worth today, you go to eBay sold listings and find out how many copies were sold today. Now, granted, there's some historical older books that don't sell as often and stuff like this. What was it? Superman number one just sold for... 5.5.
And for $500,000.
For $500,000. What's the Overstreet value for a 5.5? I bet you it's not $500,000. So yeah. Is that comic book worth $500,000? Or is that comic book worth whatever it says in Overstreet? I bet you it's worth $600,000 now. The next one that's going to sell 5.5 is going to be $600,000.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happened with Action Comics number one. One came out just under $1 million. Ooh, okay. Next one came out. $1.2 million. Next one came out, you know, $4 million. Or whatever it was, I think 3.7, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's
Well, let's talk real estate. You know, a house in Toronto, it gets valued for what it's probably close to what it's worth, say $500,000.
Like literally.
A bunch of people like it. I mean, this is a true story. It sells for over $1 million. A house listed at $600,000 like last week sold for over $1 million. Is it worth $1 million or is it worth $600,000?
Well, yeah.
It's worth $1 million because that's what somebody wanted to pay for it.
And the municipal property, whatever corporation, assessment corporation, MPAC, those of you who own houses, these are the guys that determine how much your house is worth and that's what you pay your taxes on. Is that not the overstreet of the real estate agency, real estate market? Like any good real estate agent will tell you the first thing they do when evaluating your house is they look around the neighborhood and find other houses that are almost equal to yours and how much did they sell for recently. It's the first thing they do. They don't sit there and go look through the MPAC catalog.
Let me grab my catalog.
Hold on a second here. And worse is when you go to like a flea market or a beat up comic shop or something and the guy pulls out a 4-year-old copy of Overstreet and you're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Unless you found a New Mutants 98.
That's right.
And then you're like, yes, look it up in that one.
Yeah, that's that's the thing. I mean, this isn't just for buyers. This goes for sellers as well. If you're whipping out a 4-year-old book full of values on your comic book, like 2006, you could buy a copy of New Mutants 98 in perfect condition for $10. What is a perfect condition New Mutants 98 worth now?
Closer to $2,000.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you're pulling out a 4-year-old book, not only might some of your stuff be too high, some of your stuff might be too low. So you're still doing yourself a disservice. You know, if your book's too high, your customers are going, you're an idiot. If your books are too low, you're losing money. It's like I said.
But you got lots of customers.
But you got lots of customers. You know, like it's like I said, you know, when I went to eBay, some guy was selling it for 100. Some guy was selling it for 150. I put mine at 75. It was way more than I paid for it. I made lots of profit. I had an immediate quick sale because I was the cheapest guy on eBay. And I'm happy because, you know, I paid $20 and I made $75 on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like.
No, I mean, Overstreet has its place in the comic book world history, right?
Well, yeah. But, like before the internet, it was the place that determined.
And just like hologram covers have their place in comic book history.
Yeah, die cuts. And,
you know, like back in the day. They polled major comic retailers from all across North America, and these retailers were like submitting sales reports and opinions and stuff, and that's how the value was accrued. But back then, you wanted a mail order comic book, you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I defy any millennial to tell me what a self-addressed stamped envelope is, to, you know, whoever, Doug Schlupa in Winnipeg or something like this, and he sent you, in your self-addressed stamped envelope, a typewritten catalog of all of what he's got, and then you'd like fill in what you want. You'd go to the post office and get a money order. 6 to 7 weeks later, you'd get your book. You know, that's how values were determined back then. Nowadays, you know, click, 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 boom, boom, boom on the computer. You've got 7 different retailers, all with different prices. Like somebody asked me how much a comic book's worth. First thing I do is I look on eBay sold, then I pull up Midtown. Then I pull up my comic shop, right? Lone Star, Mile High. Mile High, you always have to take into account their 40% discount that they always give because their prices are too high, and then they give you a 40% discount if you're part of the newsletter. And you take an average price of all that, that's your price.
Yeah.
You know? You could go for what is the lowest price out of that group, or you could go for the highest price of that group. And then, of course, in Canada, shipping and exchange and GST when it hits the border and blah, 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 free trade. I don't know. I've never gotten anything free across the border.
No. So. You know what else is kind of taking a hit is the one per store variants. They used to go for, I mean, even now, Midtown Comics will get one and they'll put like $400 on it on the site. Like,
well, the thing is,
like Arthur Adams, right? Yeah. They'll go local and they'll buy it for $40, right?
The thing is that like Dixon's used to get a one per store variant. And there is maybe 5-6 people in Peterborough looking for that book. Midtown got the exact same variant. And they service a comic book community of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. So they might have 500 people looking for that one copy. So demand is higher so they can charge more.
Yeah.
But in the age of the internet, well, you just buy it online from a store that was similar to Dixon's that had a copy. And Or, you know, somebody who picked it up at Dix's, not mentioning any names, and flipped it for a quick profit, not mentioning any names.
But I can, like, there was an Arthur Adams one, sorry, a couple months ago, right? And it was like hundreds of dollars on Midtown.
Yeah.
And I got it off of eBay for like 15, and I saw it in a couple stores for 20 and 40 around during like Oshawa Whitby and stuff.
And some tool who paid $2,500 for Walking Dead walked into Midtown and paid $500 for that book.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
You keep Walking Dead. You keep saying Walking Dead, and I keep thinking my last weekend where I was selling stuff at the Toronto Toy Show.
Yeah.
And the young guys in front of me, they had some graded Walking Dead, like 1, 2, 3, like we're talking, right? Mm-hmm. And from what I could tell, it's from his personal collection that he had graded and stuff, right? Well, there was another guy kind of on the other side that had some Walking Dead, and I saw this older, not well, older, but probably our age because we're old too. But, and I could hear, it was far away, but I could hear that he was buying Walking Dead. And I waited about 10 minutes, and he came, and he came to our aisle, and he said, okay, who's selling the Walking Dead over here? And, you know, those guys. And he went, and he bought, like, 1, 2, and 3. Like, and he whips out his wallet, and these young guys are going, like, ah, mortgage payment, you know?
Like, well, how much were they looking for them?
I don't know exactly, but I'm sure I heard somebody say $3,000. One of them say $3,000 for the three.
Now,
I don't know.
Here's the other thing where the exchange rate works in the other direction, right? If you're an American dealer and you come up here and you can buy a Walking Dead with an exchange rate that's favorable for U.S. dollars and stuff like this. And, yeah, I know Canadians sometimes take a look, and we're trying to price our stuff similar. But
yeah.
The number of times I've looked, the U.S. price is $25. I put $25 on it, right?
Yeah.
Canadian. I don't even think about it,
yeah.
You know, because, again, I don't necessarily need to be the most expensive guy. So if he can buy a whole bunch of Walking Deads and then with the exchange rate being favorable, go down to the south and flip it in Buffalo or some larger market where more people are looking for it for 15% profit.
Yeah.
You know, 20% profit. That might make sense.
Yeah.
You know, like markup on a computer these days is 6.5%. So if people can make money selling computers at 6.5%, then somebody should be able to make money flipping comic books. So maybe, or the other thing that I've seen happen is, some big ticket guy, you know, like the guy who did buy that Action Comics number one for $3.7 million, he's some rich, crazy guy, son of some oil sheik or something, whatever it is, he's quite rich. And he just phoned one of the guys, I can't remember whether it was Midtown or what's the other guy in the Toronto, Metropolis, not Toronto, New York. Metropolis Comics. And he just basically phoned this guy up. He says, I'm looking for an Action Comics number one. Go get me one. Well, how much? No, just go get me one.
Yeah.
Whatever it costs. Just go get me a super high grade Action Comics number one. You know? So maybe this guy's got some buyers that are Walking Dead crazy, and he's running around buying as many copies of Walking Dead as possible.
Could be.
It's like Steve from CBA, right? I got a whole set of Turtles coming in. And I got another set of Turtles. Well, why are you being greedy? You got one set. What do you need the second set for? Because he knows that for every set of high-grade Walking of Turtles that he's got minimum 7 buyers already lined up for them, ready to go. Yeah. So, yeah, he's buying as many as possible.
That's a lot of speculation.
Yeah, well, I'm speculating. That's what drives the market. You know. Anyways, how about you, Dan? You said you stopped speculating?
Yeah, because I have a problem, and my problem is once it goes into my collection, it doesn't leave. Even if the price goes up significantly, I'm just like, no, I got a good deal then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So if you follow my like Instagram account, Canuck Fan Dan, you will find lots of multitude photos where you see like 7 copies of a Minor Key comic or 7 copies of a Captain Canuck comic.
You had like 20 Spider-Woman number ones or something, didn't you?
Not 20, but I think I have about 7, including one graded one.
There you go.
And a bunch of like...
7 left, though, right?
Didn't 7 left, yeah. I sold a couple.
I thought so.
Sold a couple.
Yeah.
I'll have to pull those out and take another photo.
I have a bit of a Captain Canuck dilemma.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Okay. So for those that may or may not know, I have a few Captain Kidd comics.
Just a few.
And I happen to have... Oh, God, that sounds like bragging. I hate that. I happen to have the best CGC registry collection of the original Captain Canuck series. One of the sort of chunks of kryptonite in my collection is I have a 8.0 version of the second issue. Now, the second issue is the harder one to find because 30,000 of them were destroyed in Winnipeg. I don't know the details. I meant to ask Richard about that. Why exactly 30,000 were destroyed in Winnipeg, whether there was a flood, a fire, or...
Yes, I've heard the flood story, but I don't know anything about it.
So there's fewer copies of number two in great shape. The other thing that happened with number two and number one is they used to offer a kit. So if you were buying Captain Canuck number six and you sent away some money in a self-addressed stamped envelope to Richard Crumley, he would send you issues one, two, and three, and then later on, one, two, three, four, and five in a plain manila envelope, and it got beat up in the mail.
Yeah.
So again, high grade copies of Captain Canuck number two are few and far between. The CGC registry only lists two copies graded in 9.8. Now, the first issue, there was lots of warehouses full of undistributed copies. If I'm not mistaken, I think there's 187 9.8s graded.
Quite a few.
Somewhere around there. 200, 197. Anyways.
And a 9.9 and a 10.
Yeah. Two 9.9s and one 10. So my 8.0 Captain Canuck number two is a bit of a chink in my armor. I'd like to get something nicer. On Comic Link recently, there was a 9.8. I brain farted and didn't calculate correctly when the auction was ending, and I missed it. So one of the two copies I missed. Well, recently somebody posted a 9.6 from CBCS, mm-hmm. the competing grading company, for a stupid, ridiculous amount of money. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, if I buy this, I can submit it to CGC. I'll either get a 9.4 if I'm unlucky, 9.6 if I'm okay. They might give me a 9.8, and I can replace my 8 with this relatively inexpensively. So I was thinking of doing that. If my wife's listening, I was thinking of doing it. If my wife's not listening, I did it.
Hypothetically, if your wife's not listening, you did it. Okay.
Wowzers. So now...
Do you want me to turn the mic off so I can ask how much you paid for it?
No, you don't have to. $60 US?
Okay. For the 9.6.
For the 9.6.
Okay, that's not bad.
No, like if you...
You said, when you said ridiculous, I thought you meant the other way.
I thought so.
No, cheap. Yeah, cheap. No, and
that's a good gamble.
And shipping was $12 Canadian?
Yeah.
Right? And because it's from a guy, he ended up throwing in a couple of copies of the summer special for $1.25 US each, no extra shipping. You know that Aurora Books introduction to Canadian comic books? Red and yellow with Cerebus on the cover?
Not familiar with that
one. I'll show you what I'm talking about. He had the harder to find issue 2, which I've never physically seen, and he had it for like $5 US. So he threw that in too. So I mean, like, you know.
You got a deal.
I got a deal, so it's fine.
I have to check out this comic book. I've never been on there before.
It's really dangerous. It's like an auction site, and shipping is brutal if you only win one book. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's not like eBay where you can say, okay, well, I want this, buy it now. I want this, buy it now. This is strictly auction. So, and if you're not careful, the sharks are all on there. I'm looking at you, Tony. and they're watching, you know, and they know they're planning their entire day around when their auction ends. So they know 30 seconds from now I need to bid and stuff. So it jumps real fast. Like it's pretty quick. And it's U.S., so they charge you a fair amount of shipping. Everything's CGC'd, so everything's plastic, or CBCS, so everything's plastic. Shipping's expensive. But they kind of undervalue the book when they're shipping it, so the duties and stuff are really cheap. So that's kind of nice. But, yeah, where was I? So my conundrum is, do I submit this CBCS book to CGC in the holder? Do I give it to them saying, here's the competitor's book?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to grade it lower because there is a little bit of a sentiment out there that CGC is grading a little less stringently than CBCS?
Yeah.
Do they give it the exact same grade, which I'd be happy about? Or do they go, you know what? I'm going to give it one grade higher to motivate this guy to submit more of his CBCS books.
Yeah, it's tough, eh?
So am I going to get a 9.8? Am I going to get a 9.6? Or am I going to get a 9.4? Or do I pull it out of the slab, get it pressed for $25 and submit it and hope for a 9.8? And that it doesn't get damaged when I pull it out of the slab.
Well, you could submit it to the pressing company the CGC uses.
Yeah, I tried that with CBCS and that was a bit of a disaster. So I don't know. I'm just not sure what I should do.
Well, I'll give you $20 for your 8.
Oh, no. No. I don't think I paid $20 for my 8. I'll have to look. But I'd give it to you for a really good deal.
Still waiting for you to tell me if you have an Unholy War number 4.
I definitely do not have an extra Unholy War number 4.
Right.
I don't have an extra either.
That's number 4 of the 3-issue series. Yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, that was like some moron. I guess we're talking more about auctions and sales of comics than what came out, but that's okay.
It's fine.
There was just a doornail. Complete run.
Love this guy.
Complete run of Captain Canuck Reborn issues 1 and 2. Dude, you missed issue 3. And issue 0. Something well, it's a complete run, 1 through 2. Okay. 2 issues does not make a run. 2 issues is a pair.
That's right.
It's not a run.
Is that like when people sell lots and there's only one in them?
Yeah. And when you say it's a
lot number 7.
Yeah, and when one you say issue. It's a complete run, that doesn't mean there's no holes between 1 and 2. It means you have all of them, complete run.
Yeah.
And he's like, you don't have to order, you don't have to buy it if you don't like it. I'm like, well, nobody's going to buy it because you're a bonehead. Anyways.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
The Unholy War complete set 1 through 3.
Yeah.
He also had listed.
Yeah, exactly. Missing number 4.
Which apparently is the most expensive one, right?
Which is weird.
No, I've never had a problem with Unholy War getting any of them. Typically, I've seen it sold as a set.
I do see, like, online, number 4 seems to be, like, $15 or something compared to $5.
No, it's less than more. Okay, maybe. I thought it was more than that, but I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Number 4 was actually one of the first Captain Canuck comics I ever owned.
If only we were going to a comic convention next weekend, yes. We could, like, look and see.
That's right.
Well, you'll have to beat me to it, so.
There you go. So, Toronto Comic Con is next weekend. It's the little sister to Fan Expo, run by the same guys. Lots of great comic book stuff. It just is missing some of the other multimedia stuff. So, Microsoft won't be there. Sony with their PlayStation won't be there. But all the comic guys are there. There's lots of guests coming. It looks like it'll be about blast. Kevin Boyd, he's in charge of comic talent. He's lined up some really great guys for this, and gals, great guys and gals, for this show. And some of our favorite Canadian creators are actually guests this time around. Instead of having to pay for a table, they're getting a table. So Andrew Thomas will be there as a guest, as a professional guest. Aishay Han will be there as a professional guest with his Gladiosaurs,
we owe him a lot of money,
which we'd like to mention and talk about in a few minutes about Gladiosaurs, because it's just an outrageously hilarious project that everybody should buy. And I'm going Saturday. When are you guys going?
Saturday.
So everybody's going Saturday. Carpool is available. Right,
my car's already full.
My plan is to drive to Whitby, right, park the car, take the GO train into Toronto, take the GO train home. So if anybody needs a ride, my car has 3 seats. I think maybe Sam Tweedle's got 1 claimed. You're going with your folks and
Christine,
and esteemed wife. And
yep.
I couldn't drag my wife to a Comic-Con. She'd never go.
Come on, Carly, let's go.
She'd never
be one of us. One of us.
She'd never go. And even if she went, do I want her to go?
Yes, you do.
I want her to go to a yoga show while I'm at the... It's like Tony came by the office today and he wanted to know if... He asked Carly if I could buy... If I could have permission to buy $10,000 worth of his Silver Age comics in his basement. And my
right in the nose.
Yeah, my response was, the only way Carly will let me buy $10,000 worth of your Silver Age comic books is if I give her $50,000 for a Spanish villa.
Yeah.
You know, if I give her $100,000, she'll let me buy $1,000 worth of comics. So anyways, yeah, Toronto Comic Con, that should be fun.
So I'm excited for that. You've named 2 of the people that I have to see.
Yeah, well, most of my time, I think I'm going to be spending in Artist Alley.
I definitely have to finally meet Andrew Hahn.
Oh.
Haven't met him yet.
Yeah, Shay's a pretty good guy.
And I want to get one of those, if Andrew Thomas has the sketchbooks.
Yeah, Andrew says he's going to have his sketchbooks.
And hopefully you'll be able to get Aurora Man Zero there.
Oh, really?
Jeff has some that he shipped out to Andrew.
Oh, cool.
So those should be available.
Right on.
And I want to stop by and see Ricky Lima and get a copy of Happily Ever After for a friend.
Yeah, I picked up, I did a review of Happily Ever After for Ricky, and it'd be nice to meet him and say hi. And like, so that's the thing about, you know, Facebook friends and stuff. You chat with these people on a regular basis, almost daily, and you've never met them, so it'd be nice to kind of, you know, hand to face and stuff like this, and then they can see exactly how socially awkward you really are in person. That's me at Leonard Kirk's table.
Yeah.
Every year. I go to Leonard Kirk's table and I want to say, hi, it's Martin. We talk a lot. Hi, I want to say hi. But he's either talking with somebody else and I don't want to interrupt, or he's doing something. And I'm like, I just flip through some of the pages on this thing waiting for him to, like, you know, look at me or something. And then it's like, oh, I guess I'll go. Okay.
Okay. Can you just make this out to Marty? I got to go.
Okay. I got to go. And then later on, like, Tweedle says something on Facebook, and Leonard's like, that was Marty? Dang it, why didn't he introduce himself?
I love, like, at Fan Expo, Leonard was awesome. Like, he was posting on Facebook, like, I'm not dead, I'm coming down to Fan Expo. And then he's like, but I'm extremely late. And then I was walking around and saw him, like, almost literally running in with, like, his suitcase full of supplies and stuff. And then he gets down, sits down, starts doing his thing. 20 minutes later, I walk by, and there's this, like, I just love this. There's this kid, like, probably like a 10 or 11-year-old, and he's walking by, and he's like, sees the info on his table, because there's, like, stuff from Captain Canuck there. Yeah. And he's like, you draw Captain Canuck? And I was like, yes.
There you go.
That kid loved it. And Leonard just started talking to him about Captain Canuck. It was awesome.
Like, Leonard's a great guy. He did a couple of sketch covers for me. He did a Captain Canuck and Harley Quinn. It's just hilarious. Like, his stuff is just sharp, and I can't say enough nice things about the guy. That's one thing. If you're into comic books, hit Artist Alley. Meet the creators. They love to chat. They want to talk to you. There's so much stuff that you can, like, learn from them, and they're friendly as pie. Spending hours and hours and hours in an autograph line or you know, photo ops and stuff. I mean, yeah, they're cool. They're interesting. But if, you know, I did a photo op with Stan Lee, for example, in line for hours.
Yeah.
Hours. And then finally it's my turn. How you doing? Look at the camera. Okay, next. And I'm like, I didn't even say hi to the guy. I didn't even get a chance to say hi.
He told me I did a good job.
There you go. I was like, thank you. You know? And whereas if you meet him in the panels, or you meet him in Artist Alley or at the guest tables and stuff, you at least have a few minutes to, like, say hi and chat and stuff like this. So yeah, I just love Artist Alley, you know, and meeting some of the up and coming guys and some of the other things. Like, that's where I met Shay Hahn there. Just walking by, and he's a salesman. He knows that if he wants to sell books, he's got to grab your attention. He's got to chat you up. So he's very friendly in that regard. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, well, here, try this and try that and buy this. So you end up throwing down $5 and you figure, okay, well, whatever. You go home, you're reading it, and it's just fantastic stuff. So then you go back the next time. It's like, hey, I read that. This is great. And he engages you, you know. So it's fun.
You just have to get past that first social awkwardness.
Yeah, that first social awkwardness.
Well, it was Jordan Ritchie from here in town that said I had to meet Oliver Castaneda.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, my God. His artwork is just, and he's a great guy, too, and I've got a bunch of stuff now. So.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And so I don't know.
Hugh Rookwood, he's great, too. If you get a chance to see him.
Yeah, we bumped into Hugh a couple times at some of the smaller shows, right? Yeah. He's a hoot and a half.
He is, yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's really, 90% of the fun is chatting with the up-and-coming creators and stuff like this. Like, it's just hilarious. Like, I remember a DC booth, and there was a big lineup, and you got in there, you couldn't meet anybody. Everybody behind the counter was either Fan Expo volunteers or people you never know. They gave you a button, and then they gave you trouble if you grabbed a second button, and here's a comment, yeah, out you go. You go to Artist Alley, and you can have a half-hour conversation with a board artist that's just, you know, dying behind the table. And
yeah.
They want to talk. They want to engage. They want to, you know, just say hi.
Yeah.
So it should be fun.
Or you can go talk to Neil Adams.
Oh, God, that's hilarious. Same thing happened with Neil Adams. First time I met Neil Adams, I completely geeked out. I couldn't say anything. I was just like, So he was looking at me like I'm special needs, and he's just like, hey, would you like me to sign something for you? And I just grabbed any old print off the table. I can't remember what it was. I just slid it over to him. He signed it, and his flunky was like, that'll be $50. But the next time I saw him, you know, he was there all by himself. He was doing nothing. I came, walked over his table, and I guess because he was bored, he just started chatting me up. Then the third time I met him, I got him to do that sketch cover, and he actually invited me to sit down beside him because
he was going to take a while. Do that, yeah.
So I watched him do it, and we were chatting. And he was making fun of Canadians saying A all the time, and I was like, we don't say that. And he proved very painfully that we do.
Well, my highlight from two Fan Expos ago was meeting J. Scott Campbell.
Yeah, yeah.
You just have to have patience, right? Like, I was there talking, I don't know if you want to call him his handler, but the handler was there just kind of setting up, and I just waited. It's like, oh, he's here, but they won't let him in because he doesn't have his badge or something.
Yeah.
I waited, and the lineup started, and I was the first one in line. It was great.
Now, I managed to nab a press pass as well as buy a ticket.
Yeah.
And I was reading all the, like, do's and don'ts of the press pass. You know, as a member of the press, you're not actually allowed to interview the artists at their table.
Hmm.
It says there that they are there to interact with the fans. And if you wish to interview one of the professionals, you are to book a time with the promotion company, and appropriate interview spot will be slated for you. And I know Sam's got some bitterness towards some of these PR companies because if you're not from the right media outlet, you get jumped in priority and you get bounced and stuff. So so if I'm chatting with somebody at the table, the deluxe pass will be on top of my chest.
That's right.
When I need to get through a door, the deluxe pass is going underneath the t-shirt and the press pass is coming out.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. So it should be fun.
Yes.
Should be fun. Are we going to, like, grab dinner or something in Toronto on the way before we head back? Or
I have no idea.
I'll be broke.
Well, we still got to eat. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Should be fun. But that's next weekend.
Can I talk about Aurora Man for a minute?
You should talk about Aurora Man.
Okay, because I'm going to give some exclusive details about the Kickstarter.
Right.
I know.
I have one non-exclusive detail to add when you're done.
Okay. Well, these are just details I haven't been told yet. But, Aurora Man number one, the Kickstarter is going live March 22nd, week and a half. Ish. And as you guys know, and the listeners may know, this is going to be a big issue for myself because I wrote a 9-page story in it.
Excellent.
Awesome.
And
will you autograph our copies when we get them?
I will.
Okay.
And I'll write "I'm a big deal" on there.
Wait, we need a witness. We need a CGC witness there. When
you know what? I want to do that.
For sure.
I want to get one slabbed with, signed by Dan Collins at
Comic-Con. I happen to know a rep that lives here in town for CBCS. So.
Well, I don't deal with those guys.
All right.
No, I'm just joking. I mean, anyways. And so the issue one for the story that I'm doing, The Little Aurora Man, is going to be 9 pages. And it features art from Sharon Gauthier.
Excellent.
And she's done some work with Auric. She's coloring Auric number 3.
Yep.
And she also has a webcomic on Tapastic called Bootleg Cookie. And she is absolutely amazing. Great artist. And so for the Kickstarter, there's going to actually be... Jeff's made a Little Aurora Man tier. So on the Kickstarter, for $30, you can get $30 plus shipping. You can get your copy of Aurora Man number one, the full issue, plus a print of the characters by Sharon. And also, we are making an exclusive mini comic that features the four prologues that we've made up, as well as some other goodies in that for an 8-page mini comic.
That should be awesome.
Nice.
So those are the exclusive deals.
Excellent.
The exclusive news about Little Aurora Man.
Excellent. There's also a one of the rewards is you get to pick like prints and stuff, right? Some of the like a multitude of the rewards you can pick different prints. There's going to be a Captain Polska and Aurora Man print.
Nice.
Done by Colin Work. Nice. She showed me a few.
I saw him teasing.
Yeah,
teasing
showed me a few preview sketches. So Captain Polska is going to.
Nice.
That was the sound of Marty flexing, in case you couldn't tell.
Yeah. Now I just got to get off my butt and actually write the story that's been banging around in my head about this character that I created. I might have to borrow one of your scripts there, Dan, just to see how how the whole writing process works.
Nice.
So that should be good.
I'm excited for. I've already like. Got a preview of the different levels, and Jeff is going to be offering a pop vinyl figure as well. And I fought a bunch of people for an Auric pop vinyl for that Kickstarter.
The Auric pop vinyl looks awesome.
And now that I've got one, I need them all.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Canadian comic book creators, whatever pop vinyls you make, I will be forced to buy to keep my collection full.
There you go.
So I'm just saying. Fun.
Should be good. Yeah, I was working with Jeff there and looking at some of the stuff that he's coming out. This is going to be one of those Kickstarters that just has so much swag. He's got like an action figure, 3D printed action figure, the pop vinyl that he's working on, all these lovely prints, and mini comics, and novels, and T-shirts coming out of the wazoo. It should be a hilarious Kickstarter.
Nice.
We should mention. Well. Should mention Oryx Kickstarter. Those money,
I think they're doing
those,
all right.
Those money bags are making some serious coin. They're doing fine.
Yeah.
So no, all kidding aside, I mean we hit the stretch goal for the Blizzard issue, which is a neat way of saying a sketch cover. So that should be fun. And I saw some preliminary pictures. I'm drawn in as a bartender.
Very nice.
I'll be a bartender.
You saw and shared those on Facebook and made it your Facebook.
Yeah.
Did you make it your profile picture?
I made it my profile picture for a little while there, and
before Marty Jackman came along.
Yeah, that's right. There's one of the panels I put in there, but there's actually two panels, and apparently I'll have dialogue too. Nice. So hopefully I say something witty and
they don't want to deviate from real life though.
Oh, okay,
yeah, that's right. Can we talk TV for a few minutes?
Sure. Yeah, we got 7 minutes. Go.
Legion. You guys been watching Legion?
I watched the first episode, and the rest are sitting on my PVR. I haven't touched it.
It's become one of my favorites. Like,
excellent.
It is trippy and mind warping, and it's just you don't know what's real and what's not real, and it's a great show. Like, it's even though I'm confused a lot of the time because you just don't know, is this real? Is this in David's head? Is this character imagined? Like, it's great. It's just like.
So you're telling me I need to binge the ones that are on my PVR?
I think so.
How many? Do I have 4 episodes on my PVR?
I believe there's 4. Yeah.
Yeah.
People aren't that familiar with who he is, but he's a decent-sized character. He's the son of a very important figure that maybe I'll just leave that alone for now. But
no, it's in the comic books. Everybody knows.
He's Xavier's son.
Yeah, he's Charles Xavier's son.
Spoilers. TV.
It's not a
TV
spoiler.
Spoilers. This is where maybe Sam texts in. I knew that in 1992.
Yeah, exactly. His first appearance was in Marvel Age 17. House ad.
I think it'd be a spoiler if I described what his actual powers were, because you don't really get that. You think you know what his powers are, but you don't know what his powers are.
Now, they had a version of him in the X-Men movies, didn't they? In the wheelchair, drooling?
No, that was the right Stryker's son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with the two eyes. Although it might have been the same character, I don't know. I can never.
Whether they made him. Yeah, I just seem to recall something about that.
Yeah, because his name was David too, right?
Yeah, and so. Xavier was all like, you know, you're kind of like my son-ish.
Yeah.
I'd have to rewatch the movies because I missed that part. But.
Well, that character certainly did have powerful mental abilities well. But.
So it should be good.
Yeah.
It should be good.
Yeah, there's lots of places to go with Legion too. Like, it's cool. And there was a kind of a. What we're assuming is a big character reveal in the last episode as well, cool. Which I kind of saw coming. But anyways,
Well, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
What is it? Iron Fist? Iron Fist is starting March 12th on Netflix.
Yeah.
And already on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a score of 14%.
By who?
I don't know.
Super people who read the comics? I don't think so.
I don't know. Probably somebody like gave it 14%.
80-year-old man going, what is this crap?
They didn't give second season of Daredevil 14%.
I don't know.
So I don't know if that means anything.
Is it the same people that gave La La Land the Oscar?
Not
the Oscar?
La La Land. I will go on record to say that La La Land will be a forgotten movie 10 years from now.
Yes.
It will never be mentioned in the same breath as the real classic Singing in the Rain type
I saw something musicals. Really stupid about that whole... Did you see that comment on that whole Rotten Tomato thing? Is some people are angry because he's not Asian. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute.
Yeah.
He's never been Asian that I'm remembering.
Basically what happened was somebody thought it was a missed opportunity and they should make the martial arts character Asian. Even though the entire component of his character is the fact that he is an outsider to the martial arts community. And treated as such by other members of that community. Like, that's part, an integral part of his comic. And if you look at all the other characters, they are all properly, culturally cast. To be social, to be politically incorrect. The black character is played by a black actress. The Chinese character is played by a Chinese person. The white guy is played by a white guy. You know, like, of all the comic book cartoons, TV shows, movies... This is the one that is as close as possible and very ethnically diverse because the comic book was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, so it just seems...
Don't complain because they didn't change something.
That's the whole chicken and the egg thing, right? Like, there's a lot... There's a lack of cultural characters in comic books because they were written by a bunch of white guys in New York in the 60s, you know, and that's why there's not a lot of, you know, various cultures represented in comic books. So do we retroactively fix that? I think we shouldn't. I think what we should do is always introduce new characters. Like they introduced the new Miss Marvel who happens to be from Afghanistan or from Pakistan. I can't remember because I don't read that Marvel comic. Yeah. They didn't take the old Miss Marvel and change her identity, change her character. They introduced a new person, assuming the same code name, different costume, different powers, different origin. That's the way you do it. Introduce somebody new, you know. You don't say all of a sudden Tony Stark is not an alcoholic white rich guy. He's now going to be a Brazilian jiu-jitsu Jewish person who's broke. You know, you don't change Tony Stark. You can change the person who wears the armor.
Yeah.
But you don't change the character of the one principal character. But I think we're running out of time because Dan's fidgeting. So
yeah.
Fidgeting with the dials.
That's right.
I guess that's it for this week.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll see you guys next week.
Later.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?
level check for Eugene Levy, CFFF promo, take three.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Good level?
Yep.
Bobby Bittman here. I always listen to Trent Radio 92.7. I love this guy. I really do.
Can you do one more of those?
Sure. What was wrong with that one?
Nothing. The level was a little high.
Okay. Hi, this is Bobby Bittman. When I'm in the Kawarthas, I listen to Trent Radio 92.7 FM.